ako súvisia americké objavy, respektíve objavy amerického kontinentu a Ferdinand Magellan s falošnými správami, či môžu deti porozumieť komplexnosti hoaxov a falošných správ a dezinformácií a akým spôsobom im to najlepšie vysvetliť. Aj to sa dozviete v našej prvej časti relácie Binárne bludisko, v ktorej si postupne budeme nejako poodhaľovať ten svet komplexnosti internetu a všetkých tých nebezpečenstiev, ktoré tam čakajú, a budeme hľadať ten kompas, vďaka ktorému sa môžeme navigovať. A ja vás teda vítam pri prvej časti, ktorá je taká netradičná, na konferencii TEDx Bratislava, a kde som veľmi rada, že môžem privítať nášho vzácneho hostia Scotta Bedleyho, učiteľa, ktorému sa podarilo naučiť 10-ročné deti rozoznávať falošné správy od tých reálnych. Scott Bedley, welcome.
Thank you very much.
It's very nice to have you here.
It's nice to be here.
So let's start from the beginning. Why did you even decide to fight fake news? What was the impulse?
I mean, the original impulse came from somewhat of a tragedy, not a real strong tragedy, but something that happened to one of my students when they were giving a presentation and they got false information. And, you know, the further things got along, especially with the most recent U.S. presidential election, fake news became like the way to say it. It's false information. And so, yeah, just wanting to do something different for my students and make sure that they understood that a lot of the things that we're depending on now on the internet for information, we need to first make sure that they're accurate.
Yeah, but you talked more about this impulse, and it was a specific student. I think he was called Andy.
Yeah.
And he had problems with one presentation that you got in
school. Yeah, so it was a presentation that we were doing in class. It was also broadcast on Skype for other classes to watch. And from that moment when I didn't check for his accuracy, and I assumed that he knew what was accurate based on some of the things that I taught him about testing things, you know, I saw what happened to him when he presented that inaccurate information and everybody else knew that it wasn't accurate. So
how did you decide to fight this phenomenon? Because I don't know, I feel like there's a slight Wikipedia, the trying to Wikipedize the self-studying, that pupils, when they are trying to study at home, they use Wikipedia so much and they get false information, or they just Google it, they find one source, and right. They think that that's the accurate result. So how did you start to fight this phenomenon?
Well, at first I wanted the kids to understand the concept of what it was, so we played with it. We played with it by having the kids first find and create their own fake news. So they could see how easy it was just to twist something into being not real. Because then they understood that if I could do it, somebody else could easily do this as well. So I better be more cautious about what I'm reading online. And we are dependent, really, now in the school system for so much information online. So it's like, I need to have them ready to go in this area, because otherwise they're going to be deceived their whole life. And that could lead them into all kinds of problems. And first of all, I care about my students so much. So it's like, I want to make sure that they're not going to be deceived, either by press or government or their peers or whoever it might be that might deceive them. I wanted them to just be critical thinkers.
And so what were their reactions? How did they react to this activity?
Well, I mean, it was fun for them at first, right? Because you're finding all these crazy, funny news stories. One of the ones I gave an example of in the TED Talk was Shunki. And in my classroom, I have 21 different languages spoken. It's a very international classroom.
Okay.
And it's in Southern California in the United States on the West Coast. And he found a story about a New Zealand tourist that had died when taking an alligator selfie. And and the story turned out to be fake. And that was great. He found a fake story online. And then we went and checked and made sure that it was fake. And through that process of them playing with it and then also making some and then seeing what it compares to the truth, it was fun for them. It engaged them. And it helped them to like have a deeper understanding of what might be a hoax and what might trick them.
Did you see maybe a difference when there is a difference when we teach these things to adults and when we teach them to fifth graders? They are like 10 years old or 11.
10 or 11.
So did you have to simplify things, or did they understand this phenomenon in its complex whole?
I think the tricky part was helping them to understand the difference between fake news, which is news that's not true, and news that is filled with opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the complexity that was probably the most difficult for my students to understand, is that you could find something filled with an opinion. It doesn't make it right or wrong. Excuse me, it doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't make it fake. That's that person's opinion on that topic. Whereas fake news itself is just filled with inaccuracies and things that you can actually verify through other sources that might be different. So that's how they were able to draw the differentiation to divide, was that, you know, fake news you can verify by looking at facts and information in different places. Whereas opinions, it's just, you have to realize that there are different varied opinions out there and you can try to understand them.
But you also created, for me it's amazing, a 7 steps scheme maybe, or something that helps your student understand how to verify news and how to find out what is fake and what is not. So what are these 7 steps?
So this came from my debate years when I was in college. I was debated in college. And so it's some basic things. One is, it just doesn't make sense to your own understanding. And how does it compare to things you already know? Does it verify with other independent sources? So is it just coming from one place and nobody else is saying this? So maybe that could make it inaccurate. Is it, who are the experts behind it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a long day.
I think there was copyright also.
Yeah, the copyright was another one. And then also, has it been published in a reliable source? Has it been published by, you know, a reputable journal? And even those 7 tests doesn't guarantee, and I tell my kids this, even if it passes all 7 of those tests, it doesn't guarantee that it's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But it's far more accurate than if it only passes 1 or a few of them or none of them.
So this helped your students to understand more, or to check the variability? Or
it gave them at least a structure on how to check. Whereas if you're just like, you know, figure out if it's true or false. I mean, you could, then you're reliant on the internet again, whether it's true or false. So I wanted them to be able to be responsible and reliant on their own ability to figure out if it's true or false.
When did you start this activity with your students?
I mean, the original activity with Andy, I've been doing that in my class for years. A lot of the things that I've done around fake news itself came through this last presidential election term.
Okay.
For the United States.
And the first activity, as you told me, was that they were creating fake news by themselves. Then you made them...
First, I started sharing and showing them different fake news just to test and see their ability.
Okay.
Like, could they identify? Like, was my assumption right that they would have a hard time telling the difference between fake and true? And I was pretty accurate on that assumption.
But then it developed into some kind of an international game, or...
Yeah, so because of... Skype video conferencing, I can now play with other classes around the world. So their kids can be researching, creating, and having fake or true news stories and then test my class.
Okay.
And then my class can do the same for them. So it's a great game that I hope keeps spreading out there around the world, and it helps kids.
Do you see maybe the consequences of these games, activities that you have developed on your kids? Do you see maybe how they are behaving differently, or talking about different topics, or looking at everything in a different kind of perspective?
Yeah, I think they ask a lot more questions, which is great. And I think when they look at a website, they don't automatically just go to the first link that's given from Google. And there's nothing wrong with, I mean, Google's a powerful tool, right? But we need to know how to use it right.
Yeah.
So it'd be like giving a kid an automobile and hoping that they can drive it correctly. You need to train them and teach them how to do that. So using this scheme of play, it really has helped them understand how to drive the vehicle of Google correctly and know that there's multiple sources, how to search and see if it's a .com or if it's a .org or if it's a .gov or if it's related to an institution or something like that. So it goes up into a lot more depth.
Mm-hmm.
But it all starts with that engagement and that purpose through that game of wanting to have to figure this out. So if they're not playing that game with the other team, and I'm just saying, okay, here you guys, you need to learn this. They don't want to as much. They might want, some kids might, because they want to please their teacher, and other kids might be like, I don't really care about this. I don't see how it relates to me. But when all of a sudden there's a game involved with it, that engagement level increases, and they really want to understand how to win.
That's an amazing method, or how to get them to do this. But do they fact check you now?
They do fact check me, which is good. And I actually try to throw some things at them that they're not ready for. So when I'm teaching history or something like that, I'll throw in an inaccurate piece of information, and some of the kids will be like, wait a second. And I see them on their computers. We wrote a grant and we got computers for the kids, and I see them checking me, and it's great because I know that it's working.
So maybe could you say that your kids that are 10 and or 11 years old understood the fake news in the presidential elections maybe better than some adults in the US?
I can guess, I can speculate at that. Yeah. I mean, I would think so. I'll be curious because the game aspect is fairly new, to check in with my kids in a few years and see if it's stayed with them. So I can't say beyond a shadow of a doubt. This is, I don't have a longitudinal study that shows for sure this will work. But at least in the moment, the engagement and the ability and to see them shifting it into other context, that really says to me, when my kid's all of a sudden using it over here when they're reading for language arts, and when we're teaching English and they're checking the sources there that they're reading online, okay, so, and I didn't ask them to, all of a sudden, okay, that shows that they've actually gained that skill somewhat.
That's quite a good progress for students.
Yeah.
For me, also, it's interesting that if you see your kids, how they get information, etc., where do you see maybe the biggest impacts of fake news? On what sources? Is it the internet or the Wikipedia that in my school time, many students used, or maybe the social media? Or where do you see the biggest impact, in your opinion?
Well, for my students, social media is not a really big impact yet, but that's one of the reasons I wanted to show them how to check for facts and check for accuracy, because they're going to be old enough in just a few years to really be engaged in social media. And I think once they're engaged there, it's not like an adult's not really going to be telling them what to do on their phones and things like that. So, but if I can catch them early enough, so I don't know if that answered that question. But,
sure.
Okay.
And I think media literacy is a very important skill for not even young people, but adults. But let's teach it to kids so they know it when they are adults one day. How did other teachers or other schools react to your activities?
I mean, they're really excited about some things. I mean, I was getting emails from, all over the United States and even outside of the United States requesting information on how to do it. I'm working with the people at Microsoft to put it as a lesson on their website, and they have a network of hundreds of thousands of teachers that will be able to access that.
Oh, that's amazing. So this is some kind of a future plan. Do you have any other activities that you would like to continue with your kids or maybe other students?
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting a website just called factcheck.us or factcheck.us. And so that adults or kids or whoever can post on there, is this true? And then my kids will search up and see if it's true or not.
It's great. You build your own fact-checking team.
Yeah, we'll have a fact-checking team. I mean, kids come in with less biases than adults. And so I think they're more authentic when they fact check. Sometimes adults will share things that back up their own opinion rather than what might be true. And so kids don't have those preconceptions as much as adults. They do, but just not quite as much.
That's an amazing, I think, idea for the ending. So thank you so much.
Sure.
It's such an inspirational activity. I hope even here in Slovakia, other teachers and schools will be inspired by your activities and will try to do this with kids. So thank you once again.
Yeah, thank you.
And enjoy the rest of your day. Ďakujeme, milí diváci, a dúfame, že s nami zostanete aj na ďalšej časti, kde budeme mať veľmi zaujímavých hostí a spoločne budeme rozplietať ten zamotaný internet a celú tú sieť falošných informácií.